I'm sitting in our offices with Trent and Carly right now talking about taxes so that we can get clear on how taxes work for ministers. So let's talk first of all categories. You have three categories of taxes, maybe just two. Carly, you might even know more than I do about this. You have income tax, which is unique for ministers. You have FICA SICA, which is also called Social Security or self-employment tax. That FICA stands for something related to federal, blah, blah, blah. SICA stands for self-employment. But so that's your Social Security taxes. And so there's two particular for people who are, and this is where it gets funny in our church planting world, because the IRS, of course, has to write these regulations in ways that are broadly applicable but have some criteria to them. So they use the categories of licensed or ordained ministers. That's a little different for us because we don't do ordination. And so, and because we have people on our staff who aren't licensed or ordained ministers, but they're ministry staff. And so there's some churches have to figure this out for themselves and sort of figure out how are they going to articulate these categories. For a licensed or ordained minister, according to the IRS, first of all, you can receive a minister's housing allowance, which is the thing that's probably the simplest. All that means is that of your, let's say you make $50,000 a year, you can specify a portion of that that goes toward your housing, and it can be rent or mortgage plus expenses, so utility bills, even stuff like furniture, anything you spend on your housing. The reason the IRS made that was because back in the old days, churches would call a pastor and they would have a parsonage that they would provide, and so they would pay the pastor real little, like maybe, you know, poverty level wages, but they'd give them a house to live in. And so it's sort of like a, hey, we'll provide your housing, and so you don't need to make as much money. The IRS realized that for that to be fair, because some churches, especially church plants, didn't own property and couldn't afford a parsonage, that to treat ministers equitably, they needed to basically say, if your church doesn't have a parsonage, you don't have to be taxed on the portion of your income that you're paying for housing with. This is under fire right now because obviously there's some people like Joyce Meyer and people that make multi-millions of dollars who have mansions and they claim minister's housing allowance and don't pay taxes. And so there's a lot of abuse of that. And so, but for right now, unless it changes, the minister's housing allowance is basically, you can set aside that money and it doesn't get taxed. It's like a pre-tax deduction. So basically if you make $50,000 and you say, hey, $20,000 of that is for my mortgage, utilities, and you know, housing expenses like furniture or lawn care or whatever, then your taxable income reduces to $30,000 right off the bat. And so that's a key tax benefit that's available only to licensed and ordained ministers that is important to know about. The one you guys I think are more concerned about or asking about is how the payroll tax works and the FICA SICA tax. So here's the, and Carly, you can correct me because I'm working with data that's a few years old here, and so I don't know if there's been changes. But generally, for a standard employee, if you work at Home Depot, they have to pay Social Security. They have to pay into Social Security for you. The way that generally works, depending on the employer, is it's like 15.3% or 15.4%, something like that. Mm-hmm. And they usually split that half and half. So 7 point something is a payroll deduction. 7.65 is deducted from the employee, and 7.65 is paid by the employer, which is generally how it works. So like if you have a job at Home Depot and you get your paycheck and you see that line for FICA SICA, that's 7.65% of your gross earnings that's going into that. And that's not, you know, it's not money that's going to you. It's going into Social Security, which obviously the way that works federally is it's paying for some guy who's retiring right now. And the expectation is then when you're 65 and you retire, somebody else is paid into that and it's going to be there for you. Now, if you're self-employed, if you're a contractor and you have your own business, you're on the hook for the whole 15.4%. And so you have to figure out how you're going to – you basically pay all of that directly to the government as you pay your taxes. And I'm not sure exactly how that works. I don't know if it's at the end of the year or if you can set up a payroll where it deducts. But basically, if you're a self-employed person, you have to pay into Social Security for both the employer and employee portion since you're both employer and employee. So the way we've done it at Quorum Deo And, you know, every church has to make their decisions of how they're going to do this. For us, we've said, okay, when we hire an employee, we're going to, you know, we're going to treat it like Home Depot. So we're going to say, you know, we will be on the hook for half of the SECA and FICA, and then we'll deduct from the employee's payroll for the other half, and that's how we'll make it go forward. And so, you know, that factors into gross versus net compensation. So when we're hiring someone, we're saying, hey, we're, you know, your gross compensation is this, but that includes the portion that we pay into FICA for you. And so obviously your net is less than that. Now, for ministers, and again, this is not just for ministers. This is also for missionaries, nuns, priests, and anyone who's a member of a religious order or even like a Christian Scientist. They make it really broad. What they allow in the case of FICA SECA is an exemption of conscience, and it's sort of like how you get a 501c3 designation where you have to submit paperwork to the IRS and they evaluate that paperwork and say either yes, we will grant you an exemption, or no, we won't. The exemption is basically a freedom of conscience thing where they say, we realize that some people out of religious convictions are opposed to the receiving of public insurance. So they have an opposition to the government providing insurance or retirement or medical insurance. It's a conviction that's based on their religious beliefs. And so because we don't want to violate their freedom of religion, if they can demonstrate that they have a verifiable objection of conscience that's based on a religious conviction, then we will allow them to be exempt from having to pay anything into FICA and SECA. So that's one of those things, because it's a conscience exemption that's available to anyone who's an employee of a church. But
not anyone that's an employee, right? It has to be the ministerial role.
Well, I guess, so in our case, it would be definitely a minister. And I think it would also apply to like a staff deacon or basically anyone who would view their job as, I'm a ministry staff person. We should look at the paperwork and just see what the, because I did this all the way back when I was on staff with Campus Crusade. Mm-hmm. And so the language was just broad enough that it said, you know, anyone who's a missionary or who's a, you know, a member of a religious order or community. And so in our context, we'd have to figure out, does that mean any staff? Does it mean ministry staff? Does it mean only elders? How do we want it? So the way that it works is you have to decide, and the reason it's a challenge as an institution or an organization is because we have to basically give everyone freedom of conscience to say, okay, you have to wrestle this out in your own convictions. And it can't be, and this is where it gets challenging, it's in the eyes of the IRS, how it's written, it's not supposed to be a financial decision, right? Where if you look at it and say, could I have 15% more income, or, you know, then it's easy to go, well, yeah, I'd like to have that. So let me figure out a way to have a conscience conviction. And so they, you know, I'm sure that people do that. The IRS is written pretty clear that it needs to be for a verifiable religious reason. And so when you submit the paperwork, they actually make you express what's your religious conviction that opposes mm-hmm. you to receiving public insurance that would make us need to give you an exemption. And so we just need to ask people to wrestle through. We need to give them the paperwork and say, read what this says, and then you wrestle through whether you have this conviction or not. The challenge is, if you do have the conviction that you should not receive public insurance and that it's a matter of religious conviction, it is a significant financial advantage to you, because what it means is the money that you would put into Social Security, which we all know may or may not be there by the time you retire, that you actually now can put that money into a 401k or 403b or whatever into your own retirement vehicle, which is going to be there when you retire. And so it's a significant advantage of, you know, future possibility, because all of us know that Social Security is on a timeline as far as when it's going to be solvent. And so what that means for us is, as a church who pays payroll, we have some employees who haven't taken that exemption, and therefore we have to pay Social Security tax for them and deduct it. So we're on the hook for 7.65%. They're on the hook for a payroll deduction of 7.65%. For those who have an exemption and have that paperwork, then we need to free that. You know, they obviously get an additional percentage of that money that is available to them to either put into their retirement or whatever. And so it needs to be, and generally if you talk to Christian financial planners who work with pastors, what they'll say is, if you opt out of Social Security, the danger is this, and this is what used to happen all the time with Camps Crusade, is people would opt out of Social Security for true religious reasons, but then basically they would just see that as like, oh, well, I just don't have to pay that, and so I can spend that money on my car payment, or I can give it away to missions or whatever. And the financial planners would always say, no, if you're going to get out of Social Security, you should take every dime that you would have put into that and put it into some other retirement vehicle, because this is intended to provide for your future retirement, or if you don't believe in retirement, at least for, when you can't work as hard as you do now and can't put in the hours that you do now and need to provide for yourself or for your family. So that's kind of if people opt out of Social Security, it's wise to devote all of those funds to financial planning for the future. And so I think even in how our policies are written, it's intended to say, if you do opt out, mm-hmm. we want to try to entice you or sort of incentivize you to make sure that you're putting that money into a retirement vehicle right. so that it's not just going away.
Right.
So that's, as I understand, and here's what I know, the IRS, when they send, it's Form 4361 is what they call it, which they approve, it gets the IRS stamp, and they send it back to you and say, okay, you're approved for this exemption. And everybody always tells you, make 7 copies of that form and have it in a safe somewhere, because basically that's the only thing you have to prove mm-hmm. that you have this exemption is that form. And so what, like my parents have took this exemption 40 years ago, and like 10 years ago got a letter from the IRS that you owe us 30 years of back taxes, and it was like $207,000. And so they basically had this big rigmarole with the IRS where they had to produce the paperwork that said, prove that you have this exemption, because otherwise you're on the hook for significant funds. And so, mm-hmm. It's one of those deals where it's a freedom of conscience thing, but it's on the person who takes that exemption to make sure that they verify the exemption, that they're tracking mm-hmm. with their own planning, and that they're doing the work they need to do to be able to prove to any auditor or to the IRS or to their employer that they have this exemption.
Mm-hmm.
What other questions does that bring up, or does that?
So I think part of our questions also relate to the federal income tax piece.
Okay.
So you can opt out of FICA, SICA, but what's that do to your income tax? You have the housing allowance that's reducing your income tax.
Yep.
And I think you still pay state taxes as well. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So generally what happens, and this, I'm just speaking from my own experience here. If you have the minister's housing allowance, what it generally does is it reduces your taxable income or your adjustable, when you do your 1040, it reduces your adjusted gross income
mm-hmm.
for most people enough that you just end up in the zero tax bracket. Okay. So, you don't end up making enough income, mm-hmm. especially if you have kids and so you have the whole,
right.
child tax credit. You end up basically at a zero tax rate. And
mm-hmm.
so you don't, for most pastors who take a minister's housing allowance, the other thing that they have to do is to designate properly on their W-2 mm-hmm. what withholding they want, because generally you want zero withholding because you're not going to owe any taxes at the end of the year. Again, that depends on
number
your deductions
kids.
And if you own a house and you get the mortgage. And so you should talk with a tax planner about the
right.
pieces of that. But generally, you end up not owing any income tax. Now, you sometimes still owe state tax because their rules are different. But generally
mm-hmm.
with federal income tax, if you're an average person, you have a family and you own a house, your taxable income gets down pretty low. The important thing for anyone in ministry is that you always have responsibility to make sure that your taxes are set up the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a lot of people, because if you work for a big company like First Data or Union Pacific or whatever, they have some tax person who's just going to, their accountants are going to figure it out and they're going to hand you a paycheck and it's going to say, here's what we're holding, here's what we're withholding, and here's what your deductions are. But because you're considered, this is the important thing for, in the eyes of the IRS, if you're a licensed or ordained minister, you're considered self-employed for the purposes of FICA. And so what that means is it's your job, just like if you were a contractor, it's your job to make sure that your
right.
FICA SICA is being withheld. And it's not the company or the church's job
mm-hmm.
to sort all that out for you. And so the onus is kind of on the individual
mm-hmm.
To to do the work of meeting with a tax planner and sorting all this out and figuring out what all the pieces are and making sure that it's all right.
Right.
And most often what happens is somehow that gets confused either because the paperwork's not right or because, you know, the wrong people are looking
just
at it.
Don't
so,
understand
yeah, it can be very confusing. The IRS is, you know, obviously since the internet is available, the IRS has pretty helpful, you know, they're written in IRS language. So they're little briefs that basically say, here's how this works. And I recommend for every church planner, especially that we're coaching, that they just go read those so that they're self-aware of, okay, here's what the IRS is expecting of me as an employee, as a minister. Here's what I'm on the hook for as far as my tax planning. And so then here's what needs to happen. So for a smaller church or church planter, the assumption should be, if you just want to say how should we sort of function, you should function as though you have one of two options. One is 15.3% of your gross income needs to be withheld by your payroll company or by whoever's writing your check. If that's your church, then it needs to be the church for FICA SECA. And someone needs to make sure that that money's getting paid to the government, whether it's quarterly or annually. I don't know what the answer is to that, but someone on the administrative side needs to make sure that that money gets to the IRS, okay? And so that's why we prefer to use a payroll company, because they help with all that and make sure that gets done. So here's your two options if you're planting a church or if you're in a small church is, number one, make sure 15.3% is getting withheld and getting given to the IRS appropriately, or file Form 4361, take your exemption of conscience, and then you can do your own future planning with that money. But either way, you need to, you're sort of on the hook to figure out what happens with that. And on the income tax piece, this is where, you know, a good tax planner, it's wise to meet with, but anyone who you meet with who's a good tax planner will say your goal, and it might take your first year in a new role to where you see at the end of the year all the numbers and go, oh, okay, here's where we're falling out. But what you want to do, and what some Christians don't do well, is you want to get as close to zero as you can.
Exactly.
In terms of, you don't want to be getting a refund next year for your taxes, because what that means is you gave the government $2,000 and let them hold on to it for 12 months instead of keeping it yourself and putting it in some kind of vehicle that would make you interest. And so,
well, and this is where there's different risk aversion.
Yes, true.
So you know that you will have saved appropriately if something happens. Someone that doesn't save well and is not very wise in that way, they think it's safer to have overpaid.
Yes.
So they don't get hit
by that's true.
The bill.
That's true. And there's wisdom in that. But I guess what I'm saying is, as you settle into a role that you know you're going to be in for a few years,
if you
find yourself getting a big refund one year, what you should do then is sit down with your tax planner and say, okay, how should I be changing what my withholding is so that basically I kind of come out pretty close to zero.
Yep.
You know, again, unless you like getting a big refund check because you just would rather get that than be on the hook for a few $100.
It's funny to hear different people's perceptions of that.
This would be good for planters or whoever, but if they don't have theological convictions, are there what resources, if any, would you recommend for someone to...
About the FICA SECA thing?
Yeah, to work through that.
Yeah.
So my guess is there's probably a ton of guys who've never thought of it.
Yeah. The funny thing there is the challenge that I've had with that is it's a theological / political conviction, right? Like generally someone who's more liberal on the political spectrum and has a higher view of the involvement of government in personal affairs is generally going to be okay with the receiving of public insurance. Someone who's on the more conservative side of the spectrum and has a higher libertarian bent where they want the less government involvement is generally going to have convictions of conscience that actually that's not the government's role. And so it's hard to sort of, because theologically there's Christians that sort of fall all over the political spectrum, it's interesting that it tends to be people who have a high sort of personal responsibility / libertarianism to their thinking. But theologically, where that's grounded is in what you understand the Bible to teach about the role of the individual and the church in providing for retirement and medical care. And so, like, so the important verses would be places like 1 Timothy, where it says, if anyone doesn't provide for the needs of his own household, he's denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Places like in the pastoral epistles, where it says to you know, keep a list of widows and make sure that their needs are provided for. And even Acts 6, where you see the church organizing deacons to provide for the widows. And so you sort of, basically the theological argument is, what is the role of the family and the church in a properly Christian conviction? Is it the family and the church's job to provide for old people, retired people, widows, and those who are in need, or is it the government's job? And it's not an either or, but it's probably a sliding spectrum of, you know, my personal conviction in the study of Scripture is that I think that's up. The Bible perceives that to be highly on the Christian family and the Christian church, and only in a very secondary way on the state. And there's other people who would disagree with that and say, no, the state is kind of, you know, in our modern world, the state has taken over a lot of those functions. And so, but again, the important thing to me is that the IRS is saying it's not a historical argument of what is, it's a question of what theologically are you convinced should be the case. And so, you know, for me, as I look at that, and I think for anyone who looks at that, what they need to ask is, you know, when I'm retirement age, or I'm, you know, whatever, I'm, even if I don't believe in the classic retirement, when I'm old enough that it's time for me to scale back from working and be more of a sort of sage mentor type of figure. And, is it my responsibility at that point to have provided for myself, mm-hmm. or am I okay with the government and society providing for me? And that question will probably determine how I feel about that being an exemption of an issue of conscience. Okay.